Longhorn Radio Network. Adventure and mystery. Classic series from radio's golden past. Presenting Clive Brooks in The Secrets of Scotland Yard.
How do you do? This is Clive Brooks. You want to make some money? Do you in these days of austerity want those little luxuries that mean so much? You want to be the first to pay for a round of drinks and give the barman a good tip as well? Or do you want to stand on the sidelines, unable to do a thing for want of cash? I think I know your answer. Well, if you really do want to make some money, you must procure some plaster of Paris, solder, tin, bismuth, pewter, and a jam jar. I'm afraid you must also have a little capital. It takes money to make money. Not much capital, say half a dollar. You won't need anything else. Go ahead and make as much money as you need for the day. That's good, don't you think? Also, I feel that you couldn't strictly be asked to pay income tax. You could point out that you made the money yourself and that the mint had not been troubled. On the other hand, I must warn you that you stand a risk of being sent to prison for life. In the old days, the penalty was death.
On this fifth day of July, in the year of our Lord, 1721, a Simon, Barbara Spencer, apprehended in the gross and treasonable offense of falsely and secretly manufacturing shilling pieces in great number, to be strangled unto death, and then burnt at the stake. Here are ye! Here are ye!
Yes, Barbara Spencer in 1721 was the first person ever executed for counterfeiting. By the way, perhaps you'll be surprised to hear there's hardly one counterfeiting case in police records in which a woman is not involved. Isn't that so, Inspector?
That's right, Mr. Brooke. Women always seem to be chosen as agents for the coiners.
Ah, yes, agents. Perhaps I should explain to listeners that fake money usually goes through four stages in its criminal career. Firstly, it is coined by its maker. The coiner gives it to his agent or go-between. She, for it's generally a she, sells it to the buyer, and he in turn employs a fourth person to pass the coin off as currency. Coiner, agent, buyer, and passer. In legal phraseology, the passer is the one who utters the counterfeit, uttering in this connection meaning to use as currency a forged or altered instrument or coin, knowing it to be forged. The passer very rarely knows who the coiner of the fake money is. With a respectable business as a front to his activities, the coiner carries on his criminal ventures in secret and well-hidden places and is not easily discovered. But he doesn't always escape the law. Now take the case of Thomas Craven, alias Cooper, alias Tom the Tailor, who carried on his trade in Bethnal Green, a suburb of London. In the same street, there was a tobacconist's shop. It was here that something occurred one day that was eventually to put Tom the Tailor in prison.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning. 2 ounces of green gem tobacco, please.
2 ounces, sir? Here you are.
Thank you. How much is that?
3 shillings, please, sir.
Let's see. 2, 3... There you are.
Just a moment, sir. This is a bad sign.
Is it really? I say you're quite right. I wonder who gave me that. Anyhow, here's another. That's a good one.
Yes, sir. That's a good one. Good day, sir.
Good day.
Freddy? Freddy?
Yes, sir?
Mind the shop a few minutes, will you? A bloke's just tried to pass off a dead coin on me for the second time this week. This time I'm going to follow him. And I'll tell the whole story to the first police I see.
Good follow there. Good luck, sir.
I say, Constable.
Yes, sir?
My name's Black. That's my tobacconist shop across the way.
Mm-hmm.
You see that guy in the grey suit looking in that window over there? Mm-hmm. Here. See? He's been joined by a woman.
Yes.
Well, twice this week he's tried to pass off a dud coin on me. I've been following him since he left my shop just now.
A lot of those floating about nowadays.
Yes, but he used the same words each time. I think he's in the racket himself, and he knew it was a dud.
Hmm. Well, you may be right. What woman he's talking to? Well, I don't know, huh?
Oh.
Yes.
I see looking piece of good. He's just given him something.
Hmm. We've had her up on one or two charges before. Wish I was in plain clothes. I'll keep after her.
Let me know if anything happens, will you?
Yeah, right you are.
The policeman followed the young lady. She went into Tom the tailor's shop. When she reappeared a few moments later, she went straight to the street corner and there met another man, to whom she again passed something. This time the police constable waited no longer, but took her along to the police station. There she was searched. 30 fake florins were found to be sewn in the hem of her skirt. She was obviously the agent for some counterfeiter. But whom? The police constable, remembering that she'd visited Tom the tailor's shop just before her arrest, decided to give the old chap a call. Tom was a well-known character in the neighborhood and had established himself as likable and kindly.
Morning, Tom.
Oh, good morning, officer. Just a moment. I'll ring for my assistant.
You needn't do that, Tom. I only wanted a few words with you.
Well, in case someone else comes in wanting to be served.
Hmm. Tom, a young lady came in here about an hour ago, dressed in blue. Did you serve her?
Young lady? Yes, of course. That'll be Miss Pritchard. She comes to ask whether her father's jacket was ready yet.
The father's jacket?
Yes, that's... unfortunately, I hadn't finished the sleeve yet, but why do you ask, officer?
Oh, nothing, Tom. Just wanted to see what he was up to. I say, your assistant seems to be a long time answering your bell.
Yes, he's a lazy scoundrel.
Hmm. Why don't I take him around, Tom?
Not at all, officer, not at all. You know the way down.
Yes, all right, thanks. Don't let me disturb you.
The suspicious police constable went down into the basement. But the scene that met his eyes was exactly what you'd expect to see in the basement of a tailor's shop. Long benches, yards of material, and several cutters at work with scissors and needle. But the constable wasn't satisfied, for he was sure there was something going on in the shop. He turned the matter over and over in his mind, until suddenly he jumped on what he knew must be the answer. The next day he paid another visit to Tom the tailor.
Morning, Tom.
Oh, good morning, officer. One moment, I'll...
Oh, Tom, you won't ring. It's just what I want you to do. You don't mind, do you?
Well, why? I just want to ring for my assistant, officer, in case some other customer comes in and there's no one to serve.
Are you positive that's the reason you want to ring, Tom?
What other reason could there be, officer?
That's just what I'm going to find out. If you'll stand aside and let me inspect your basement once more.
Why, you...
No, Tom. No foul language, if you please. Let me pass, will you? That's right. All right, you fellas, don't throw anything on. You're caught red-handed.
Blimey, the police.
I never heard the bell.
No, you didn't hear the bell. I'm afraid I prevented old Tom from ringing it. He tricked me that way yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What a setup you have down here. Burnishing board, plaster of Paris, silver solution, lamp-black, battery racks. One might almost think his gentlemen have been doing some coining. All right, I suggest you all come quietly. I have three other men waiting for you outside, so up the stairs in quick time, please.
And so Tom the tailor's coining establishment was discovered, and old Tom was sent to penal servitude. Now it's time for us to examine more closely the methods of the counterfeiter, and there's no better place to do this than in that morgue of criminal instruments, the Black Museum of Scotland Yard.
This might interest you, Mr. Brooks. One of the earliest counterfeit coins.
Ha! It's astounding that anyone can be taken in by that. Cut with a pair of scissors from a sheet of brass and silvered over, then passed over as a shilling. The coiner's methods have certainly improved since those days. These coins in the next case, they're practically perfect.
They are perfect.
I know, don't tell me. They're pattern pieces.
That's right, sir.
A pattern piece. In other words, a genuine piece of money from which the coiner takes his cast
in parts of Paris. So you see, you do have to have money to make money. And into that cast he pours whatever metal he uses. Solder, tin, bismuth, and of course, most of all, pewter. Yes, you may be surprised to know that the best foundation for a counterfeit coin is obtained from pewter beer mugs. In fact, whenever the theft of pewter pots is traced, it's 10 to 1 that the thief is in league with the coiners. A certain publican in Whitechapel, London, will vouch for that.
My name's Bill Carey. I run the Green Man Pub down in Whitechapel. It's a fine old place with plenty of tradition, if you know what I mean. Though there's one tradition we don't keep with anymore. The pewter pot cleaning competition. You see, in the old days, George, the potman at the King's Head pub across the way, used to come over to the Green Man once a year, and we used to see who could clean the largest number of pewter pots in an hour. I remember our last contest. It was about 10 years ago on a Sunday morning.
Go on, Bill.
Go on.
Done with it, George. You're blind as usual.
No, anyway.
Yes, I'll give him Bill. Bill's the winner again. That's 2 years running.
Hooray!
Oh, it was a lovely race, Bill. Thanks ever so for letting me come along. My, you two are certainly quick with your hands.
Yeah. Yeah, Norman, is that the right time? I must get back to King's Head. The boss will be furious.
Oh, cheerio all. Bye, George. See you soon. We'll fix the date for the next contest.
Here, Robert. Cheerio.
Well, we never did have any more contests. When the missus and me comes to count the pots that night, as we always did after a big day, we found there were 12 missing. Yeah, that was bad enough. Well, what was even worse was the number of phony 2-shilling pieces and half crowns we took over the counter for weeks to come.
And undoubtedly, most of them came from the pewter pots that Bill and Jimmy had raced to clean on the previous Sunday. The pewter would be melted, poured into the mold taken from the pattern piece, the two sides of the cast being kept together by clamps of hoop iron to secure a firm impression, filed, edged, and continually checked to get as near as possible the weight of a true coin. And then would come the most important process of all, silvering. The process of silvering coins is very similar to that of plating knives, spoons, and forks. Into the vat is dipped what is called a battery rack.
There is some over here, sir.
Ah, yes, it's rather good specimen. Simply a long piece of thick wire bent into a series of twists and turns in order to hold about 12 coins at a time, and made in such a way that no coin is touched by the wire in more than 3 places and all on the edge. These are well made. Whom did they belong to?
Sidney Atway, sir, the master coiner of Fulham.
Ah, yes, he did everything conscientiously. We might do far worse than study his methods, don't you think?
We have a full case of his belongings over here.
Good. Let's get acquainted with Mr. Sidney Atway, the conscientious coiner. Sidney Atway was one of the most scientific coiners of modern times. He approached the whole subject in a most artistic fashion. Coining to him was more a hobby than a profession. And to it he devoted all the loving care that some give to stamp collecting, others to photography, others still to bird watching. His real business was the pawning of articles bought cheaply at sales and auctions. Only if the pawnbroker offered a profit, of course. But he had many other interests as well, as we well know from his diaries and private papers.
Went to a cookery lecture today. An attractive young lady gave us a complicated recipe for old English trifles. I found an address book of all the English taverns in Paris. The following shops are those at which furniture may be had on hire. Prescriptions. One, for removing surplus hair from the back of the neck. Two, the right treatment for headaches. Three, the proper ingredients for making a highly satisfactory mustard plaster. And four, a certain cure for sluggish liver.
But it was from a brooch pinned to the lapel of his wife's coat that gave Sidney Attray the idea to start the activities for which he is famous. It was coronation year in London, and Mrs. Attray had stopped on her way home from shopping to buy one of those souvenir brooches that everyone was wearing that year. Her husband, being an extremely mean gentleman, as most cooks are, was furious when he found that she'd been spending the housekeeping money on herself.
Gilday, what's that you've got pinned to your coat?
Oh, Sidney, don't be angry. I couldn't resist it. It's one of the souvenirs they're selling in honor of the coronation. I thought it looked rather nice. Don't you like it?
Let me see it.
Oh, now look what you've done. Why can't you keep your temper? You've torn my coat. Oh, why couldn't you let me unpin the brooch? I'd have shown it to you.
2 sixpences on a pin.
Yes. You see, they're bright new sixpences, minted this year.
How much did you pay for this?
1 and 6. So, you see, it only cost me 6, really. Because the coins always were worth their money.
Get downstairs, wasting my money on trash like this. If ever I catch you buying yourself things out of the housekeeping funds again, I'll take a stick to your back.
Oh, you're horrible. I don't know why I said it.
Fine thing. 1 and 6 for 2 tanners on a pin. What a... Wait a bit, though. What a way to make a profit. A few bright sixpences, a drill to make the holes, and a nice-looking safety pin. Or, why should they be real sixpences? Why not make my own? Sell them as souvenirs? Not claiming them to be real money. Only 1 in 10 suckers will ask whether it's genuine. And there's no trouble attached, as long as I don't pretend they're anything but iron make. Yes.
Attray didn't stop at sixpences. He made shillings and half crowns and sold them as coronation souvenirs. When asked to pay 3 shillings for a half a crown medal, the purchaser would usually pass over the money, saying, "Oh, well, I can always use the coin if I'm hard up." But if he ever tried to use it as currency, he would soon discover his error. Having now got interested in the coining business, Sidney Attray went about learning the methods thoroughly. Whenever he came up against a particular snag in the processing of the metal into coins, he would write to one of the daily papers.
To the editor, Evening Herald, Fleet Street, London. Dear sir, have any of your readers any useful hints and suggestions as to the best way to make an electric battery? If so, perhaps you would be good enough to publish their letters in your correspondence column. To the editor, Daily Gazette, London. Dear sir, I hope you will publish this letter. I want to find out from any knowledgeable readers the simplest way to make solder from silver.
There were generally numerous replies. Few people can resist the temptation to air whatever specialized knowledge they possess. And Sidney Attray's possessions in the Black Museum include a scrapbook full of newspaper articles and letters, all most helpful to him in his work. Of course, he bought the standard chemistry books as well and marked all the relevant passages. He evolved his own recipe for the silvering of coins. If any one of you are taking notes, I should perhaps mention that the process takes years of practice and many disappointments before it yields any reward.
When the coins have been removed from the mold, I put them on battery racks of my own making and dip them into the vat. Coins made from Britannia metal, tin or pewter, are not dropped into acid before plating, but into a very strong and boiling, repeat, boiling, hot solution of pure caustic potash. I then scratch the coins with a small brush, made specially for this purpose, and then plunge them straight into cyanide of silver solution at about 190 degrees Fahrenheit. An electric current from a battery is then run through the vat until the coins begin to receive a thin coating. Then I plate them in the ordinary way to give them a full amount of silvering required. And then on to the burnishing board.
The burnishing board is a piece of wood on which the coins are set.
being kept in place with pins and brushed over with an old scrubbing brush on which some ordinary lamp black has been applied. This process relieves the fake pieces of any undue brightness and consequently suspicion. Mr. Atway used the seat of an ordinary wooden kitchen chair as his burnishing board. It's in the case in the Black Museum, which contains his other paraphernalia. 17 bowls, one battery, 2 ladles, plaster of Paris, melting pot, plate of sand, brushes, drill, 9 bottles of chemical, another battery made out of a 3-pound jam jar, files, clamps. What else?
Well, sir, there's some of the fake money that was found at his home when he was arrested. 200 half-crowns, 100 florins, 150 shillings, and 206...
What a collection. He certainly was coining money. And that's not counting the fake currency he must have put into circulation during his 17 years' run as a successful auditor. A few more Sydney Atways and England would really be in danger of inflation. Yeah, a fascinating character. On his arrest, he turned to his captors with a disarming smile.
Well, well, gentlemen, I hope you will tell the Royal Mint of my exploits. They should consider my career as a great compliment to themselves. After all, is not imitation the sincerest form of flattery?
We have now examined the methods of making a counterfeit coin. What happens then? How does it get into your pocket or mine? When the coin is satisfied that he can get no nearer to the real thing, he wraps the coins in tissue paper, generally in parcels of a dozen, with a piece of paper between each coin to prevent jingling when they are being passed from hand to hand. The woman agent now takes the parcels and sells them to buyers, either in public houses or in street corners.
Morning, Bill, Charlie.
Well, up, sir.
Can I buy you one, miss?
I'll have the same, thanks very much.
Make it two, Charlie.
Oh, no.
You're late. I was told to pass.
Oh, I was being followed. I had to dodge around a bit. Got the stuff?
What would I be here for if I hadn't? The price has gone up, though.
Why? With a profit, you may got 2 more numbers.
Thank you, sir.
1 and 5.
Righto.
Take one note. Give me some change, will you?
Right, sir. Roger. 8 and 7 change.
Thanks.
You're a real 10 bob, Daddy, gave
you? Of course. You don't think I'm trying to penny business here, do you? You were saying the price has gone up. What, 2?
Well, I've got 3 packets of buff rounds, as in each. It'll cost you 10 shillings. That's £4, 10 shillings for half a quid.
Oh, I suppose I'll have to buy it. I've got 4 posh creaming for more funds. Here you are. It's 10 bob.
Something fun, though. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, thanks, they're okay.
Of course they are. I told you I wouldn't ever try any funny business in here, didn't I?
Oh, yes, you're so honest. Well, good afternoon.
And now the buyer will pass on the fake currency to his employees, who in turn will pass it off on the shopkeepers and the general public. How? Well, there are several methods. For instance, a woman will go into a shoe shop carrying several parcels. She will pass some time selecting a suitable pair of shoes, and then she'll prepare the ground passing something else.
Dear, I have so much to carry. Could you deliver the shoes?
Certainly, madam, at what address?
12 Blakely Road, Mrs. Adams. Oh, and could your boy bring them in an hour's time? Otherwise, I shan't be there.
Very well, madam.
The delivery boy turns up at 12 Blakely Road an hour later and is met by the woman just outside the gate. When she tells him that she is Mrs. Adams, he hands over the shoes to her and asks her to sign the receipt.
Please.
Janet Adams. There. How much do I owe you?
37 and 6, please, ma'am.
Mr. Silver, I'm afraid. Oh, and there's another shilling for yourself.
Now, thank you, ma'am.
Only when the delivery boy hands the money over his employer do they realize that he has been given 5 or 6 false half-crowns in the cash. And, of course, there is no Mrs. Adams living at the address. After all, let's admit that we are not as careful as we should be about the money we handle. And the opportunities for a swindler to pass off his counterfeits must be extremely numerous. Perhaps you're one of those who make it a rule always to count your change. But how many times do you inspect each coin to make sure that it's a genuine article? Not very often. Sometimes there is no apparent cause to inspect or change, as in the following incident, which occurs in various shapes and forms about once a day in different parts of the country, generally in public houses and quite often in the cocktail bars of expensive West End hotels.
I say, the barman.
Just coming, sir.
I must say, the service nowadays, even in one's own hotel.
Extremely sorry, we're a bit full today, as you can see.
You want to get more help?
Well, I think I'd like better, sir, but it's not so easy to come by.
Well, perhaps you can manage to supply me with more Scotch and service.
Certainly, sir.
Oh, by the way, did Lord Milburn leave a message here for me? My name's Burley, James Burley.
There wasn't any message there for me, sir.
Extraordinary. He swore he'd leave a note if he couldn't make it.
Perhaps at the desk, sir.
Oh, good idea. I'll try there when I've had my drink.
Yes, here it is, sir. Double scotch. Stay waiting for this order, will you, sir?
That'll do.
How much do I owe you?
That'll be 5 shillings, please, sir.
No. Yeah. There's a pound there.
Thank you, sir. £15 change.
Say,
Arthur?
Oh, I say, you've given me all silver. Makes my pocket so heavy. Haven't you a 10-shilling note?
Oh, yes. Sorry, sir. There you are, sir.
There's 10 shillings of your silver back. Oh, and buy yourself a drink with this.
Oh, thank you very much, sir.
Did you spot the passing? I expect so. You were listening for it. In changing the 10 shillings for the silver for a note, the fictitious Sir James had substituted a few fake florins and shillings for the real ones. And that's coining for you. A woman gets a pair of shoes at a reduced price, a man gets a free drink and perhaps a bit over, and the coiner runs the risk of penal servitude for life. Is it worth it? Well, do you want to make some money? Oh, that's where we came in. By the way, the simplest and most effective way to detect a fake coin is to bite it. If it produces a gritty sensation on your teeth, it's not wartime food. It's a fraud. Or is that the same thing? Well, that's all for now, but I'll be back again soon to tell you some more of the secrets of Scotland Yard. Meanwhile, this is Clive Brooks saying goodbye, and check your change.